Hello and welcome to the Systematic Understanding of Everything, an Exalted podcast. This show is a collaborative effort between members of the Story Told, Bonus Experience, and Made the Podcast. We're going to break down the basics of Exalted from its rules to its setting. I'm Chaz, Exalted writer and fan.
I'm Monica, third edition supplement developer and lead mechanical developer for Exalted Essence.
I'm Terry, producer for the show, and my original title for this episode was The Northeast, the Canada of Creation.
This is episode 15, Sorrow and Empire. Before we jump in today, a quick addition to our episode on the north. The Bishop of the Chalcedony Thurible also lives in the north, northeast of Whitewall, and is part of the deathly threat against that city. I had the northeast part of that stuck in my memory and forgot the relation to Whitewall, so thought the bishop was part of the northeast rather than the north. The bishop is a mad prophet of oblivion, perhaps the most dedicated of the Death Lords to the destruction of creation. I've double-checked the locations of the rest of the Death Lords, so we shan't forget any as we proceed through the directions. Anyway, on to today's topics.
Today we're going to take a tour of the northeast.
There hasn't been a ton of published material yet for the Northeast in 3rd edition, so for my research for this direction, other than the new locations, I turned to my 2nd edition books, drawing from the Terrestrial Direction books for the North and East, and the Celestial Direction books for the Wild and Underworld.
What is the elemental or narrative theme of the Northeast, and how is it expressed?
The Northeast sits between the poles of air and wood. The climate is on the cold side of temperate and is heavily forested, especially eastward.
The Northeast is also a land of dynamic empires growing from the roots of old traditions, and that can lend itself to grand stories of diplomacy and conquest, as well as highlighting the themes of change in the Age of Sorrows.
What are the key geographic features of the Northeast?
The Northeast, like we said, is wedged between the North and the influence of air, and the East and the influence of wood. The Fang Lakes, which are these big lakes in the Northeast of creation, if you look at your map, define the northern bound of what we're considering the Northeast. And you'll also notice a river flowing out of the White Sea. That is not a mistake. That is a river that flows backwards, driven by ancient sorcery that once irrigated the whole vastness of the Northeast. However, the sorcery that once purified the salt out of the water is failing. So now brackish water flows upriver for thousands of miles across the direction.
I have to throw in here that I do particularly like 3rd edition's attention to detail on making sure there's more water on the map, which was something I feel was notably missing from previous editions.
Yes.
Yeah, yes, like all these people live here, but where do they get their water from? And I'm like,
Water access is one thing that's important. I've always imagined that the smaller rivers just don't show up on the big global maps.
It's zoomed out too far?
Yes.
You just can't see it?
Okay. Yep.
There's also the Halton Redwood Forest, where massive trees hold cities, and the forest floor is a hunting ground for the fair folk. It is like Endor, but bigger.
That sounds like Kashyyyk.
Is that like Endor, but bigger?
Oh, yeah, like in every conceivable way. And the ground floor of Kashyyyk is full of giant poisonous spiders that just eat things. So anything that can make a Wookiee go, holy shit, that's scary, you know that's next level. And just replace that with fair folk, and I think this writes itself.
I think Kashyyyk is further east, where the forest gets truly endless.
Okay.
But, yes.
This is a Star Wars reference that's beyond me.
One of the other neat domains that is driven by the association with the pole of wood, but also the influence of the wild, is a region called the Land of Night. It's a border march at the edge of the wild where the sun never appears in the sky. The moon and stars move as if time passes, just the sun never rises there.
How does that work?
Wibbly, wobbly, timey-wimey wild magic?
Okay, because there was a big discussion on your Discord about how shadows work in creation and whether, like, a sundial would work.
Yep.
And I was just curious. And the answer is, in that region, no, it wouldn't work.
In that region, a sundial would not work. That is very true.
Yes. I'm sorry, my sundial is blinking 12. How do I...
The forest there has unusual trees with white or black bark, red leaves. Giant carnivorous bats hunt clinging from the bottom of mushrooms that tower above travelers. And at the heart of this domain, soot-black ghosts inhabit a shadowland called Fatal Onyx, ruled by Nephrak necromancers. And these ghosts hunt mortals, fair folk, and exalt alike. It's kind of a neat little place, the haunted mushroom forest.
What does Nephrak mean in this game?
It's one of the categories of really scary ghost.
Got it.
Yep.
They're specifically capable of necromancy?
Yes, I believe they're ghosts who have given their names over to Oblivion, and that gives them some power.
The Black Chase, another Shadowland, stretches north along the Silver River from Sajan. The trees are twisted and sickly and grown over with fungus, with only the black-barked ash growing strong. The forest is haunted by the ghost of an ancient behemoth whose skeletal form towers over the trees.
What behemoths Spooky. Can have ghosts?
Pretty sure anything with a soul can have a ghost.
So behemoths have souls?
All behemoths go to heaven.
Is it one of those things where the terrain gradually transitions, where after just having fields upon fields of, like, tundra, it slowly turns into shrubs and then taiga and then arboreal forest and then, like, it's a tree made out of smaller trees or whatever happens in the east?
Yes, it is. It is a series of gradual transitions. The cross-quarter directions are not as strictly defined by their elements or by the things in them, just because there was kind of a dearth of material for them in past editions. So they end up being a bit more mixed in terms of the topography that you'll find. The northeast is no different, that the southern parts of it are very much like the scavenger lands. The northern parts of it really could be included in the north. The eastern parts of it really are like the rest of the east. And then you have a number of transitional zones.
What are the key cities and cultures in the north?
Well, we'll start with a new one off the top. In Fangs at the Gate, you have Iskame, the Empire of the Bear. This is one of those northeastern empires spreading from the shores of the Fang Lakes. They are guided by the Book of the Bear, as interpreted by shamans and scholar priests. The Book of the Bear is their religious book that was set down centuries ago by the Lunar True Voice, who set up the royal family. And then the Lunar left, went and as part of the Silver Pact, brought the war to the realm. And in her absence, the priests and the royal family have reinterpreted the book slowly over the generations. And now that she has returned as a holy prophet, they no longer recognize the signs that she laid down in the book, and have kind of turned to build their own little empire-building project instead of being a weapon of war against the realm.
Also makes me think of that one meme that's like, do you want to join my religion? And then the person responds with, what's your religion? And it's just the picture of the cat, like, with the paws up. They're like, I'm interested. I'm like, what, do you want to join my religion? What is it, just a picture of a bear? I'm in.
One of the things that I really like about Iskame is how it shifts the position of Lunars relative to the cultures that they're shaping. One of the elements for Lunars that was really strong in past editions was their role as creators of various civilizations around creation. And here you have that as the case, and see how things get out of hand very quickly, because one exalt, as powerful as one exalt is, usually can't lay down the law for centuries if they're off doing other things. And I like that piece of Iskame.
Yeah, it makes it very interesting. I guess that brings us to Sajan, which we are including in the Northeast, as it's geographically kind of on the border, given that the Northeast is not a hard-to-find place. And also, our Scavenger Lands episode is going to be really busy because there's a ton of shit going on there.
The reason I pulled it in here is the river systems. The River of Tears is one of the defining features of the Northeast in the material published in previous editions, as well as third edition. And the Silver River that Sajan is located on flows out of the River of Tears. So that is the geographical justification that I have on that one. So what do you remember about Sajan?
Yeah, here's what I remember about Sajan. Yo, that's the City of the Dead, right?
Indeed.
Which is sort of less the city of the dead and more the city of death, in that it is full of morticians and necrosurgeons and necromancers and other people who involved in some kind of underworldly practice. Sejeni's death experts make sure that your ghost has power and status in the underworld when they die, and that's their big deal. You want to be buried by them because they'll make sure that you have it good in the next life.
For the right price, of course.
That's one of those things that feels super exalted to me, is that there's this whole place whose whole, like, commerce is, we'll make sure you have it good when you die.
So what's a necrosurgeon?
They're people who stitch together zombies and the undead and, like, make horrible flesh constructs. The core book also calls it out as a cool place for liminal characters to have contacts there or be from, as everyone there is chill with death and they're Frankensteins. So that's neat. That's got a hook built right in.
Oh man, that's like when you get to go to a furry convention if you're a furry. That's
yes,
great.
Yes, it is. It is.
Take that, Lunars.
One other neat thing about Sijan is that over the generations, they've built tombs upon tombs upon tombs that have sunk into the earth. So you have this kind of stacked graveyard full of mausoleums, and you can quest down in to find relics of the past and all that that were laid down for ghosts. And it can be a great place to, say, go tomb raiding to get your artifacts, assuming you either pay the morticians enough or avoid them.
In the bribery sense, or is it like a theme park where, like, oh, you need your adventuring pass?
In the bribery sense.
Okay, cool.
When I guess one of the things is that they get paid to look after your remains for a time. So you pay them on time. Once that payment runs out, they will no longer tend to your tomb. And so they will sell things out of it at that point.
They auction you off like an abandoned storage unit.
Moving on to another one of the new locations set up in the Northeast is the Satrapy of Meadow. It was once a budding empire in the wake of the contagion, warlike and conquering their neighbors, but they were defeated by the realm legions and have since been a loyal satrapy of House Tepet. They're in fact House Tepet's only remaining satrapy held in full control. It was traditionally ruled from the fortress city of Karash, near the eastern end of the Hanasea Wall, I think that's how you say that, which sounds awesome. But on the wall, the ghosts of Mido's ancestors stand beside their living kin to defend the land against the dead. And the finest young warriors of Mido are conscripted to serve in the Realm Legions. Cool. One other thing of note, and again, we're jumping back to the north here. It was one of the groups that we skipped, that the Toman clans, who are nomadic peoples who live in the far northern tundra, are actually descended from Midoans who fled the realm. So you can find out more about them and their lunar protector in Fangs at the Gate.
So how many empires are there out there that are like legit empires that aren't the Scarlet Empire?
The Empire of the Bear is a fairly small empire, but I think counts as an empire.
Prasad,
yep, that's definitely an empire. I would say that the Bull and the Icewalker Empire is definitely an empire, but a young one. There's a whole bunch of empires that have been defeated or fallen in some way, like Mado, which is not an empire today, but was once. Grand Chirac fell into the same category. So there's a bunch of them, and then there's a bunch of potential budding empires.
And the Scarlet Empire, I assume from their worldview, you are either part of the Scarlet Empire or an enemy of it. Like, they don't recognize any other empires, do they? They just consider it like unruly border provinces or something like that?
For the most part, yes. They have kind of a tacit recognition of the Empire of Prasad, in that from a realm perspective, the Empire of Prasad is a faraway satrapy, and the Prasadi send gifts to the realm. Magnanimous gifts between empires that the realm considers tribute. So it's kind of the way that China looked at some of its neighbors that were not really ruled by the Chinese, but sent enough gifts to them that they were part of the Chinese worldview in that perspective.
Okay.
The Icewalkers are northern nomads who follow herds of whatever animal defines their tribal association. So like mammoths, elk, horses, whales, and so on. Other hardy northern creatures. They are fierce raiders who come into regular contact with settled folk when times are lean. More like a mashup of Mongols and Inuit. The solar warlord Bull of the North united a bunch of Icewalker tribes to build a conquest empire. Sort of very much sort of like the Mongol Empire are a bunch of different nomadic people who became this mobile empire.
So the Bull of the North is to the Icewalkers as Genghis Khan was to the Mongols, uniting not all of them, but a bunch of them, and then taking their conquest against the established powers of the region. So there's a bunch of little places that are part of the Bull's empire. One of the big ones that is kind of the Bull's capital is Plenilun, the greatest of the Salt Spire cities. We talked about the River of Tears being pulled out of the ocean and desalinated. It is the Salt Spire manses, these ancient spire-like structures that jut out of the river, that do that, and they produce salt. And around each of them, these cities were built to control the salt trade and to maintain the manses. Plenilun is the greatest of those cities. The other ones all have manses that are failing, which is why the river remains brackish. But the Salt Spire League, which was once a rival of Plenilun, are now united with the people of Plenilun, kind of in under the Bull's empire, but also in resistance to the Icewalker occupation. There's a lot of interesting tension there.
You've made mention in a few episodes about like leftover First Age artifice. What would it actually take to fix one of those salt spires? Is that something where it's like, someone needs to spend a 3-day weekend and like figure it out? Or does it represent like the apex of engineering? Like, is there a comparable thing that you could say, it would be like if civilization fell and someone were trying to build a nuclear device or something like that?
It's probably not quite civilization falling and building a nuclear device, but it is a significant investment, not just of engineering skill, but also sorcery. So to repair First Age artifice, and we can get into this deeper when we do an episode on the craft system, requires both a mastery of crafting to be able to craft artifacts, and also a level of sorceress mastery in order to perform a sorceress working to enable the crafting to even happen.
Is there anyone in setting that's running around trying to fix these things, or is it one of those things that everything is in chaos, so no one has time to try and fix the pool's hot water heater?
In this case, there is actually someone trying to fix them, and we'll get to him in a little bit. Karn is another little piece of the Bull's Empire. They're basically Vikings.
Now including Vikings. I think also to sort of answer Terry's setting question, is it a lot of stuff where it's just like, here's a thing that's fucked, is to give you some place to latch your player characters onto. Let's move on to the Linawan tribes and their home city of Rubilac. They had sort of an indigenous North American people kind of feel, and I kind of want to say Iroquois, but I am not very knowledgeable on that subject, so I'm doing my best here to not eat my whole foot. But I do remember that the more detailed write-up included things like familial longhouses, which is what made me think of that. They're also a tribal society, and they do put a cultural importance on like animal masks as like a totemic thing. But I don't think that part is specifically an Iroquois thing. That's maybe another native tradition that I am less familiar with.
Dugout canoes and all that.
A whole lot of river-based trade. But they are also treated really poorly by everyone around them, which makes that indigenous people comparison really kind of something.
It's not a good look.
It's not a good look, no. And by treated poorly, I mean like raided and stolen from and attacked and enslaved. Woo! Also, the Haltons desecrated their sacred sites a long time ago, and now they hate each other. And this is really a place where I think I would absolutely love to see a writer with some sort of actual native background take a stab at making it cool and fresh, and not, I don't know what to call this, gently racist.
Somewhat problematic. I do want to zoom in for a second on their masks, because the masks are made by Linoan shamans who bind spirits into the masks and then award them to those who have exhibited some kind of a great feat. They are imbued with magic powers from the masks. So that's kind of a neat, unique piece to them.
On the other side, we have Halta. And here's what I remember about Halta, which is it's a city in the trees! There are giant redwoods. There are talking animals. There are people with green hair and weird feet. And also, in previous editions, it was created and ruled by lunars, which we've since gotten rid of, which I think is probably for the better. Okay, Chanta itself is their, like, capital, and that's one giant tree, not a bunch of trees. And it is extremely magical, and the giant tree communicates with the people. And that, I forgot about that, and the third edition core book reminded me.
The tree is wise and shares his wisdom with the city's priests and entheogenic visions.
Entheogenic visions, yep.
So, like, this tree produces MDMA? That's amazing. What's the tree's name? Molly. Like, oh, how'd that happen?
Also, as we mentioned before, the Haltons have a deal with the fair folk who eat anyone who's on the ground, and that protects them from invaders, especially the little one. I kind of always felt like the setting wants us to think both parties are equally in the wrong, but like, the Haltons have a magic tree society and a deal with horrible monsters from outside of creation, and they totally went and, like, peed on some indigenous people analog sacred sites, which, in my opinion, definitely makes them the worst party. That's my exalted hot take.
I definitely felt in previous editions like the Linnaman were presented as the bad guys in this conflict, and all of those points about the Haltons are good ones. I think in previous editions, the other piece of it that has been de-emphasized in third edition is the Linnaman's alliance with the realm, mm-hmm. where the Linnaman's were explicitly tied to the realm and sent slaves to the realm. And also the Haltons were democratic-ish, which set them in the good guy role, in quotation marks. And that seems to have been backed down in the third edition presentation. Also worth noting that, like the Hislanti, the Haltons have lunar backing in previous editions. That doesn't seem to be here in third edition.
How do the fair folk in this area change? Like, I got the vague impression that the fair folk are different around creation. Like, they take on attributes of the pole they are near. Is that true? Like, do the fair folk in the Northeast look different than those in the North?
Yes. The fair folk in the North, I think we mentioned, kind of fall into that classic beautiful fairies who are immical to human life. The fair folk of the East have had a more tribal template applied to them in previous editions. They are very much like bound into pacts and aggressively hunt anyone traveling the Eastern forests.
What interesting or notable historical events happened in Northeast?
Well, the big one is the Bull of the North and the breaking of House Tepet. The Bull was an old ice walker and went out into the wilderness to die, but was chosen by the unconquered Sun, and then returned to unite various ice walker tribes and create a small empire up in the north. The realm got ornery about it and sent the House Tepet legions. They brought the bulk of their legions to fight the Bull's army. And between the betrayal and sabotage from House Sessus and the might of the Solar Exalted's army, the legions of House Tepet were destroyed. They talk about something like half of the legions being killed, but it's one of those things where, like, if 20% of your legion is killed, you're not down by 20% of your fighting force, you're down by all of your fighting force, and House Tepet has suffered the same. That has left the Bull with his army not destroyed, but greatly weakened, occupying an empire that can no longer expand the way it once could, and it leaves the realm's influence in the region greatly weakened.
When we've talked before, every solar is 5 years old or less, but it sounds like this was a person that escaped that cull.
There was always a handful of solar exalted who weren't got during the usurpation, and so instead of their souls being bottled up, they continued to be reborn. That's why for so long the Dragon-Blooded, in addition to their war against the Lunars, put such a strong emphasis behind hunting the Anathema, because there were probably like a half dozen solar souls just out there that would periodically reincarnate. And the Bull is one of those who appeared shortly before the Empress's disappearance and far enough away that they didn't get him quickly enough.
So what would draw a circle or a character to the area?
Like anywhere in creation, there's lots of reasons to come to an area, but a couple that jump out to me are that, number one, Cigen is one of the safest, and I'm going to put that in scare quotes, places to consult the dead or enter the underworld.
The book does, in fact, call that out as, like, a cool liminal place, as we said earlier, but you could also do abyssal stuff there, too.
Yep.
Or anybody who's interested in necromancy.
It's Sijan, though, seems different, though, than Thorns. Like, Thorns seems to be generally viewed as, that's where the Mask of Winners is, this is where this great expansion outward is going to go, and the dead are going to take over the living. Sijan doesn't seem to have that same interaction. Is there something that makes Sijan more stable or more acceptable and not necessarily as much of an open threat? Is it just the fact that it's further away?
It's not being occupied by a Death Lord.
Yeah, Sijan doesn't have a Death Lord occupying it. It also has a long tradition of being intermediaries between the living and the dead.
Okay, which makes it more liminal than abyssal.
Yes. And I think we can even use the small L liminal there, not just liminal in the exalted sense, but also liminal as in between places. Sijan's Order of Morticians travels throughout not just the Scavenger Lands, but across creation, learning the rites of the dead so that they can serve any who would pay their price for burial in the city. Another thing that could draw a circle to the northeast would be the Bull of the North. Bull of the North is probably one of the most widely known solars in creation. So for dragon-blooded characters, they might be there to kill him. Or for solar or lunar characters, they might be there to court him as an ally. So that could be a draw to the region.
Then, of course, there's a whole boatload of potential for Silver Pact activity. I mean, obviously, especially around Iskame, which, you know, was founded by a lunar. But you have a lot of these outlier civilizations who have various tenuous connections to the realm, who you could possibly break them of that connection and then use that to strike back at the establishment or attack the realm's supply lines and stuff. There's a whole lot of things out here that I feel like are logistically important to the realm that might matter to the Silver Pact. Imagine playing a character whose whole deal was like, I'm going to get Linawan on the lunar side.
Yeah, I was just thinking that would be a cool character.
It makes sense that the north is this giant icy expanse and you get from point A to point B by walking or flying, and maybe there are roads or something like that. But as we go towards the east, which just seems to be impenetrable dense forest, how do people get around?
So it's not all impenetrable dense forest. A lot of it is kind of varied country or cleared country that has been farmland or is kept unforested by the brackish waters of the River of Tears or some other contrivance. But there is an answer for how they get around in Halta anyway, which is that they've set up highways among the trees. So the trees are big enough that they have encouraged the branches to grow together. And then flatten the top so they can pass along tree roads.
Just like on Kashyyyk.
Yes.
What makes the local economy special? Like, what goods and services are there? What raw materials is it noted for? What's the Northeast got going on there?
So we, of course, have salt from the River of Tears and the salts by our manses and all that. So there's the salt trade is important.
The guild also trades throughout the Northeast, bringing ivory, both mammoth ivory and walrus ivory, from the north through the Northeast, as well as furs to the Scavenger Lands.
And then, of course, we have relics and the dead and Sijan's trade in funerary services that brings lots of wealth to the morticians that live there.
What interesting characters or gods live or lived in the Northeast?
Jürgen Kaneko, the Bull of the North, and his circle. So we talked about him being an aged ice walker and now conqueror of empires. His circle also includes Reneth, Twilight Administrator of the Salt Spires, who is in fact trying to repair the purifying manses of the Salt Spire cities so that the region can be fertile again without the salt pouring up the river. Samea, who is a Zenith cast ice walker, prophet, and sorcerer. And Nala Bloodaxe, a former guardian of Whitewall, turned conquering warrior. If you asked me to tell you anything about the Bull's Circle, I would say it's a bunch of solars. The details about them are not really the important thing. I think the Bull and the rest of his circle work best set against the players, rather than just a set piece out there in the world, either as enemies or potential allies, but definitely antagonists in the classic sense of the word, who are not immediate allies. The Circle could make a great series of antagonists for Dragonblooded, for a Dragon-Blooded campaign. They could make an interesting series of social challenges for Solars or Lunars seeking their aid. The key is going to be don't let them drive the story. Make sure that your characters are at the center. Another option that I thought about in terms of using them is you could replace them. If you really like this whole little conquering empire of the Bull, you could potentially replace the Bull's circle with your circle of player characters. And that gives you, if you're not comfortable with the total freeform that Exalted can offer, say, have the Bull as the senior partner of the circle, and then the Bull's circle could be the player characters. So you kind of have a quest giver, again in quotation marks, a lot of quotation marks in this episode, who can help drive the story from that perspective. I also want to give a shout out to my favorite version of the Bull here, who was presented on the Exalted actual play podcast, Swallows of the South, where the Bull was a woman and she was wrapped up in a cycle of revenge between the Ice Walkers and their neighbors, which I thought was a lot more interesting than just the conquering empire aspect of the Bull.
So now that Chaz has offered some very good advice, I'm going to talk about how much I don't like the Bull of the North and his circle. And I know you're going to ask me why, and it amounts to basically sucking all the air out of the room, which Chaz actually did a very good job of demonstrating. Because if you have a character present in your canon to whom you have to go, well, you should not let them drive the story as opposed to your players, and you could just have the players replace them, or you could just ignore them entirely. They're already sucking all the air out of the room. They're not just a cool tool in the toolbox like a bunch of these other characters are. Like, even compare them to the Lunar who founded Empire of the Bear, who did a really big thing, and then it got out of her control. That character is not someone you would be like, well, don't let her drive your story, because that's already done and taken over. And so you have this character in this big location who has done something huge and is just occupying so much player character territory. Solars are specifically the newbie Exalts. So you have the Gary Stu and his Mary Sue, because Samaya is also a character who Exalted pre-Jade Prison. So you have two characters who are pre-Jade Prison who are already notably established powerhouses who are sitting in this particular area. And Solar Stories are about, you know, carving your own path and finding yourself and figuring out what you're going to do with all this power and, like, impressing your own will on the world and making the change you want to see in the world and all that. And then the setting is like, here's someone who's already done it, smiley face. Even though, yes, of course, everything in a book is fluid and you can ignore it and you don't have to engage with anything in a book at all, it's still there. Like, you still chose to print it. And that still means that there will be someone who will be like, no, you can't do that. The Bull of the North already did. And while I do also believe in don't designing for assholes, I also believe that you shouldn't write characters that are occupying so much space they're taking away PC territory. Oh, and also, like, the Twilight is trying to fix the fucking Salt Spire things, which is, like, prime starting circle problems. Like, there's already someone, like, taking over that particular hook, too. And I don't know if 3rd edition will change it, but Samaya was also a Solar Circle sorcerer, so literally the most powerful kind of sorcerer there is. So not only is he more powerful than everybody else, but his buddies are all more powerful than you too. It's not even an example of someone who tried and failed, and therefore you, player character, can do better. Like, he literally succeeded in destroying the legions of one of the great houses, which, yes, is an example of something a solar player character can do, but y'all went and gave away the whole thing. It's already done. Like, you're not helping him destroy the Tepet legions. He's already done it. And anyone who tries to break a legion too will be the character who followed what the Bull of the North did, as opposed to helped make that happen. Just following it as written, another character breaks the legions of Kathak or something, is not doing something new and shocking. They're following up something that has already happened. And I think it's just too complete. He's too successful. Yeah. He's not in the middle of causing something happening. Like, he has already succeeded. You can't jump in and help him smash the realm. He's not on his back foot. He's literally a conquering presence. And then they leave you with, like, well, he's kind of having a hard time holding it together, which is way less compelling than this rising star who you could maybe follow behind or be buddies with. He's already succeeded. I kind of wish that 3rd edition had reimagined his particular struggle as being something that is in the process of happening, as opposed to having already happened. You have space for Lunar characters to jump in on that too, because they're invested in, like, destroying the realm. So yes, that's my big problem with the Bull of the North.
Is it the fact that he did everything, or that he did everything and is still here?
Like, I'm fine with the character existing, and I'm fine with the concept of this guy who's kind of being a real big pull, and, like, he's been around a little longer than everybody else, because one of the other things that solar characters don't really have is anybody to turn to for mentorship. I don't find him already being successful and then having a hard time holding his, like, little empire together as being a good place for solar mentorship. Like, that is a one-way street. He's not getting anything back from you.
Would this be analogous to playing Star Wars role-playing during the Rebellion and having Luke, Han, Leia, and Chewie running around out there? Just someone else has done every possible cool thing you could come up with?
Yeah, I guess it would be trying to play like a major character in an arc of the original trilogy where you kind of know how it ends already. I just think it would be more interesting if he was either on the rise, and so therefore you have a reason to join up with him and then like treat him as a mentor, even if it's someone you intend to betray later, because that's certainly quite a story, right? Or had attempted and failed, and then he's someone, even if he's not dead, then he's someone who you can be like, let's take another shot at it.
I think they do walk it back a little bit in third edition, but not enough in saying that it wasn't just, oh, the bull destroyed House Tepet, but that realm politics destroyed House Tepet. I think that does work better. There's an implication in what Fire has wrought that without the betrayal, House Tepet would have crushed the bull, which I enjoyed. On the topic of House Tepet, there's a cool new character introduced in Mido, Tepet Nerus, who is a House Tepet warrior who has forsworn gender and sworn only to a warrior ethos that emphasizes true self over fitting oneself to others' expectations. They're dedicated to ruling House Meadow for House Tepet, and only their rule has really held the satrapy for their house and is one of kind of the bright shining stars in House Tepet's season of sorrow.
I love this person and that their gender is warrior.
Yes.
Yeah, I really hope the bathrooms in their manse have like a little guy, a little girl, and then like a fist or like sword as a third option. I'd be like, oh. So what interesting creatures, natural or supernatural, live there?
There are, of course, hawk folk and bat folk that live in the forests of the Northeast.
And we mentioned the talking animals of Halta.
Are there any local gods of note? Anything like on that supernatural angle, or just all the cool dead stuff that's attracted to Sejan?
There's the cool dead stuff. Kind of the trouble with the Northeast and pulling characters out of it for this is that previous editions really stuck to the four-direction breakdown. So the Northeast kind of falls between things and doesn't have a lot of dedicated characters.
Is there a story that you've run in this location, or alternatively, a story you'd like to run in this location?
My longstanding semi-internet famous character, Sarah Swinnerblood, is from the Northeast.
Monica, can you tell me about your character?
Zenith cast, melee focus, a like lead from the front warlord type. Is a character I particularly enjoyed making snarky one-liners with.
Nice.
A character who very much was the sort to just like make quips through combat. Perhaps some of my animosity towards the bull had to do with them being wolverines facing each other's territory as they were neighbors. But my explanation for why I actually don't think it's a particularly good thing on a setting whole thing has nothing to do with the fact that like I had a character that didn't like him once.
Sure.
Thank you, Terry.
It's not that my ex is dating him now.
Honestly, being able to be like, fuck that guy, I want to fight him, is using the character well. I do have problems with that on a design level. I have a cool drawing that Yuran did, that I can link and we can put in the show notes.
Yes.
You've called me on it, and now I can't think of any other important details. So it would be cool to play that character again, especially in Essence. My spouse made up a whole location that was a volcano caldera, like it was a manse that was like an old volcano, and so this place in the somewhat cold Northeast was like spring warm all the time, and it had all like the manse itself was like this geothermal water manse that was underneath it, and so you have this place in the middle of this like somewhat barren, like between the north and northeast kind of divide, where like this small kingdom has agriculture because it's got aqueducts and is on top of a geothermal manse that lets them have food all the time. And so like people trying to take it over because it was a place that could produce its own food without a problem was like one of the plot points in both versions of the game.
Cool.
You invented Iceland.
I did invent. I did.
How about you, Jazz?
Well, looking at the Northeast as a region for this episode, the themes of kind of identity and tradition really jumped out at me. A lot of these empires are leaning into forming a shared identity. So if I were to do a game in the Northeast, I'd want to look at one of those, either Mido or Iskame or even the Bulls Empire, and examine those kind of ideas of tradition and identity. I'm also really digging the idea of the Bull as an antagonist and needing to build a coalition against his circle rather than him as an ally. What about you, Terry? Anything that jumps out as you as exciting to dig into in the Northeast?
The thing I would want to dive into is I really like the oracle tree in I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce it. And I like the idea of a starting circle being given a seed that the tree is reproducing. And they need to find a home somewhere in the Northeast to create another one.
What if one of the characters was an exegete of that tree god?
Oh, yeah. I could totally get behind that.
I'm just extremely charmed at the idea of, like, the Mandalorian, but with a baby tree.
Oh, sure. It's just like with Groot, and people could be like, is this canon? We'd be like, yes, this is entirely canon. A guy that looks like Boba Fett carrying around baby Groot with a bunch of friends to find a home in the ice wastes. You're like, is that Hoth? Like, no. Or something like that. Now that you mention it, the North is a place where there is more space than people. And in the Northeast, it seems to be getting more, I don't know, people are butting elbows. There's not quite as much unclaimed space. So the idea of figuring out where to set up a space of your own, as it were, I think is a neat idea. Yeah, that's the game I want to play.
Nice.
Where are we going next?
Next episode, we are going to dive into Exalted Social Systems, and then in the following episode, as we continue our tour of creation, we'll take a look at the Scavenger Lands, Exalted's classic starting setting.
And with that, Monica, if we want to know what you're up to, where can we do that?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm @ZenithSun. Or you can listen to me talk about all kinds of game design stuff and the discourse and argue with Terry about how to get paid on Bonus Experience, which you can find at bxpcast.com.
And you, Chaz?
I am continuing to run The Fall of Giara on the Story Told podcast. And if you want to follow me, you can find me on Twitter as @StoryToldChaz.
And if you want to know what I'm up to, @TerryRobinson on Twitter. Maidsofpodcast.com for all that sweet, sweet purple and gold Old World of Darkness goodness. Also, since our last episode, we made $7 on DriveThruRPG, so thank you to whoever clicked that little link. We'll have a bunch of links in the show notes. You click on that, you buy something, it helps us keep the lights on. And thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to Systematic Understanding of Everything, an Exalted podcast. Go to exaltcast.com to subscribe, see our show notes, or listen to our past episodes. We're available on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and Anchor.fm. If you have a question, shoot us an email at questions@exaltcast.com. If you'd like to support our show, please consider using the affiliate links in our show notes to make purchases on DriveThruRPG and TheStorytellerVault.com. The opening theme is Return of the Solar Exalted, and the closing theme is the Sidereal Exalted Lesser But Safe from Fanfare for the Chosen by James Semple and is used with permission. In the meantime, exalt strong.